Good day, everyone. Welcome back. At this point, I would typically thank the hosts for last night's superb hospitality. So instead, I'll just simply say I hope you enjoyed a nice meal with your loved ones. So that's as good as it gets, I guess. We got off to a good start yesterday with Ericky, the chairman of the trustees, giving us a good update on the recent activities of the foundation. We had a good... I thought a very good panel discussion on a topic that is of great interest to the board and to the trustees, and that's the monitoring of adoption of the standards. We heard from the Basel Committee, IOSCO, and the IMF. And then we ended yesterday's session with an update from Mark Byatt of the staff, outlining the comprehensive, the carefully considered strategy for keeping pace with and enhancing users' digital experience with respect to the IFRS standards. So it was a rich discussion and ran over time. I had asked for, and I'll do the same today, I had asked for and I had received a few submissions in writing. So again, I encourage you to send your thoughts to Anna Simpson and to me. So, like yesterday, we're going to start today with an update. Very pleased, honored to have with us Hans Hugo Vorst to talk about the work of the board. After we hear from Hans, we'll then turn to Anna Simpson on work related to KPIs, KPIs related to work, to technical work. Again, please make sure you are muted until, of course, you're ready to speak. So, Hans, can I ask you to start us off today?
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Well, first of all, good day, everybody. Good to be with you, even if it's only virtually. Advisory Council, always one of the best meetings of the year for me, also because you get to talk to people personally. That will not be possible today. But the quality of the discussions yesterday was very good, and it is pretty amazing what you can do virtually. I will talk a little bit about our reaction to COVID later, but by and large, we as a board can more or less function as before. We can do most of our work virtually, except for, you know, the social networking that you really need in this job. So. For the long term, it would be terrible, but in the short run, we can really do our work. And where we have delayed things, it is mainly to accommodate our stakeholders around the world, many of whom are really struggling to get through this crisis. But a little bit more about that later. Let me first update you a bit on. Our production since the last Advisory Council meeting. We published several important consultation documents in the last quarter of 2019 and at the start of this year. First of all, primary financial statements. I've talked to you about that several times, so let me be brief. Exposure draft was published just before Christmas. And as you know, the proposals have three key items. First of all, the creation of new subtotals in the statement of profit or loss, including the definition of operating profit. And we strongly believe that will give much more better structure to the income statement. And because of this structure, it will also make the comparability, improve the comparability of the income statement. It will also make it easier to digitally digest the information in the statement of profit or loss. The second main key proposal is the improved transparency and discipline around non-GAAP numbers. Companies will be required to disclose what we call management performance measures in a single note, accompanied by reconciliations to the closed IFRS subtotal. And that will make it much easier for investors to find information and to judge that information. I can hear that some people still are not muted. So there is some background noise. If everyone could check, please. Then the final key proposal is improved disaggregation. The proposals contain new guidance to help companies disaggregate in a more useful way to investors, a better analysis of operating expenses. And also importantly, it will require companies to identify and explain unusual income and expenses. And this is an area where there is a lot of unbalanced presentation these days in non-GAAP. So that's another way of providing to improve the balanced representation of the actual performance in the income statement. Then in March we issued a discussion paper around business combinations and good. General feeling is that investors do not get enough good information about the performance of acquisitions. And the key proposal of the discussion paper is to improve disclosures about what is it that a company tries to achieve with a takeover, and how in the years that follow the acquisition, how are they performing relative to those goals. And we think that can be very useful for investors. Also, we will ask your opinion about the accounting for goodwill and impairment. How is it accounted for in the years after an acquisition? A perennial accounting debate without a very clear and satisfactory answer to everybody. So we will discuss the merits of the impairment test and amortization. The board was with a slight majority in favor of retaining the current system of non-amortization and relying mainly on the impairment test. But the board was, as you know, almost split down the middle. For that reason, we really want this to be an important part of the discussion. We want to get both sides of the argument on the table again. And we really hope that people will be able to provide us with new evidence on the merits of either amortization or staying where we are. By the way, I think that the disclosures that we would require in a new approach that about the performance relative to the original goals of the acquisition might help companies identify necessity of impairment where necessary. Finally, we issued a request for information about IFRS for SMEs. We haven't adjusted the IFRS for SMEs standard in a long time. We feel it's time for an update to incorporate the new developments in IFRS. And the request for information is really all about how far should we go in updating IFRS for SMEs. What should we include in the new standards relative to the new standards that have been issued since the last review of the IFRS for SME standard, and what possibly not? Very important. A lot of countries have adopted IFRS for SMEs, and even in national gaps, IFRS for SMEs has a big influence. Okay, so those were the three major developments since our last meeting. And then came the COVID-19 pandemic. We went virtual. And as I said, we can do pretty much what we want. If you look at time-sensitive projects, people like IBER and IFRS 17, people really want us to get on with it. And they are able to provide us with feedback letters as if things are normal, if it's really necessary. Nevertheless, we have delayed publication of several smaller amendments that packaged them together so that they went out as one rather than individual amendments. We have extended the comment deadlines on all the three consultations that I just mentioned. So PFS, Goodwill, and IFRS for SMEs. We have extended the deadlines by 3 months to just give people a better chance to participate. We've also delayed the agenda consultation and other consultations by several months. Then we also published some educational materials on the on IFRS 9, on the application of IFRS 9, the expected loss model. This is the first time that the expected loss model is really tested, because until now the economic circumstances have been very benevolent. Of course, there's now a lot of pressure. And we have published some educational material on how to deal with it. Quite frankly, I had expected more unrest around IFRS 9. You heard some people saying, oh, this is pro-cyclical, etc. But by and large, people have managed to deal with it. And using the room for judgment that the standard has. I do not exclude that some banks may find out that their expectations for the immediate future have been too rosy, since the adjustment periods in many countries have been extended. So we need to follow this very closely. Also, there was a request to do something about IFRS 16, the leasing standard. As you know, a lot of companies have to deal with rent concessions, such as rent holidays. And if we had not done anything, then all these contracts would have had, they would have had to take a look at and make a judgment as to whether this is a lease modification or not. And we produced amendments published today to make it easier for companies dealing with rent concessions. We acted very quickly, a short comment period, 14 days. And even in these circumstances, when things are really important, people react. We received more than 100 comment letters. So I think we, despite a very short period, we had a good participation of our stakeholders. And we held two supplementary board meetings in April and May with this issue. We are also continuing to progress with IFRS 17, giving so that implementation of this important standard is not delayed. We discussed sweep issues during the May meeting, small questions that emerged in the drafting process, and we are still on track to issue the amendments at the end of June. As you know, the effective date will be 2023. We feel there's still not plenty of time, but sufficient time for people to get on with it. And then finally, we published an exposure draft on phase two of the IBOR proposals. Common deadline ended 25th of May, and the aim is to help companies provide useful information to investors about the effects of the reform of IBOR on the financial statements. Although I have heard rumors that some of this reform might be also delayed a little bit. It addresses issues affecting the financial statements when changes are made to contractual cash flows and hedging relationships due to the reform. And we still aim to issue final amendments later this year. So my update ends here. In summary, we're still getting on with it. We give our constituents a bit more time where necessary. But even in these difficult times, people sometimes really need us to step in, and we are still able to do so in a timely fashion. Thank you, Bill. I'm happy to take questions if they're there.
Great. Hans, thank you very much. So the message is, I like how you started. There's still a lot that's getting done. The foundation staff, the board, still quite active. So a lot can be done in this current mode, but it's not a long-term arrangement. still, as you've demonstrated, there's still a lot to be done. Greg, would you like to have a word or make your observation about IFRS 9?
I mean, just 2 points that I was just putting my thoughts so that everyone could read them. I mean, I cover the insurance sector, but the firm I work for is a specialist in financial services. And the IFRS 9, especially around European banks, we were writing a lot of research and getting a lot of inbound. And when I was glancing over that research and the inbound, it was very technical of a nature. And you know, it was, I suppose, investors trying to get up the learning curve pretty quickly to understand, you know, how the fair value impairments work. The other thing is I noted, I thought was quite interesting, of the board discussing goodwill and that they were just in favor of retaining the amortization of goodwill. When you go and look at, for example, large Asian insurance companies that do very large distribution deal acquisitions, they just chuck all the goodwill into other intangible, they call it distribution rights, and then they amortize it. So in effect, just ignoring the, well, not ignoring, I mean, they are, I think they are probably correct in the interpretation. They're not being dishonest, but they are effectively amortizing acquisition goodwill via that route. But really.
Okay. Good. Well, that's very helpful. These are exactly the kind of comments which would be very helpful in your reactions to the discussion paper. So I really encourage you to participate in the, in that discussion. And on IFRS 9, there's a lot of judgment in calling in estimating the expected losses resulting from this crisis, and that is why and banks can have different judgments, and that is why it is extremely important that the disclosures about what is underlying the expected losses as estimates, what economic estimates, for example, are underlying these judgments. These disclosures are extremely important to investors so that they can make a judgment themselves which banks are probably making the right call and which others might be either exaggerating it or not taking enough expected losses.
Thanks for that, Hans. Thanks, Greg. Vijay.
Vijay, did you Isabel, thank you. Hans, I just have an observation. I was sharing it in the other forums too. As far as the primary financial statements are concerned, given the pandemic and the lockdown, we are having difficulties in doing the field test and doing with all the stakeholders, including the investors, preparers, and the regulators. So it's the consideration of extending the last date to 31st of December. The 3 months might actually make a difference. For example, in India, we planned a significant activity in April to June for field test and outreach, but 3 months has been a complete washout. And it's unlikely that the next 2 months also we'll be able to do much. You know, this standard has far-reaching implications in terms of the structure of the financial statement.
Well, thank you, Vijay, for this. I agree with you that this standard is extremely important and has far-reaching consequences. So we have to be sure that we do it right. We will monitor what's going on in the world and to what extent people are having problems or not. I'm sure there will be another moment where that we will take a look at the time period, whether the 3 month delay that we have given, if that's enough or not. So thank you for your input.
Thanks.
Two additional quick comments, both related to IFRS 9. Giuseppe, over to you, please.
Thank you very much for the educational material of the application of IFRS 9 during the COVID crisis. I am on the audit committee of a fund, and I certainly try to make good use of it. I wish, though, that the document had more details on the examples, but I think it's a great document anyhow.
Okay, thank you.
David from the ECB.
Yeah, thanks also, Hans, for the good presentation and overview. IFRS 9 is still a moving target, so it's very premature, I think, to make a judgment. And we should wait with judgments until these days are hopefully over. What we have seen, though, is a bit also a bit concerning on the quality of application. Just using public data, you can see we compared the pre-impairment expenses and the level of loan loss provisions. Yeah, and what we could saw is a very strong R-square 60% correlation of the level of loan losses and ECL estimates that were taken and the pre-impairment profit, which also could be a strong signal that banks are using the uncertainty that is unquestionable at the moment, because the uncertainty is huge, to smooth profits and to adjust the level of ECLs to exactly match the profits available pre-ECL. And this, even though this is very premature, of course, to judge, we also have the impression that probably there is some work ahead on the quality of ECL modeling approaches. And the way macroeconomic outlooks are incorporated, and this will probably concern us over the next 2 years.
Well, David, that's very interesting what you say. What you just by superficially reading in the newspapers what banks are doing, there seems to be some correlation between the strength of a balance sheet of a bank and the willingness to take provisions. And that is not so surprising, perhaps, but it is worrying. You mentioned earnings management possibilities of the standard. That was, of course, exactly the reason why originally IAS 39 used the incurred loss model rather than an expected loss model, because of the possibilities that it creates for earnings management. But we also learned during the crisis that that IAS 39, the incurred loss model, was used for loss management and postponing them to the very end. So, I think this crisis has no advantages. It's just terrible. But once in the PIR of IAS 9, we will have a lot of interesting information about how it works in practice.
Thank you, Hans. Sue, let's hear from Sue Lloyd, please.
Thanks. Just building on what Hans just said, David, thanks for your comments, and I should take the opportunity to say thank you to you and others in the regulatory community for the close cooperation on IFRS 9 questions during this crisis, because I think it's been very helpful for us all. I think you're right. If there's any benefit that can come from the dreadful situation we've got at the moment, it will provide us with a richer set of information for when we do the post-implementation review of IFRS 9, because I think it's going to give us a very good source of information in terms of how good the disclosures were, how understandable it was for investors, and also whether the sort of timeliness of recognition of losses was what we had anticipated, and whether there's anything we can do to improve application going forward.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. I was going to make a similar point. I thought the board's educational material was really well received, very timely, of course, and it was consistent with what a lot of supervisory authorities around the world had published. So all in all, I think this is, as you pointed out, aside from the tragedy of the pandemic, this is an excellent opportunity to have a deeper look into IFRS 9. All right, Hans. Many thanks for your time today. That was an excellent update on the work of the board.